Y'all know what it is, man. Y'all rocking with Blackout Radio. This is the mayor. Normally rocking with Controversy, but he's a little bit behind. We're gonna have Dr. Shambra Moda on the air with us here in a few. So, you know, we are definitely looking forward to that as well. But, you know, one thing that really irks my nerves, you know, that I don't think a lot of people really talk enough about, and that's people that don't stay in their own lane and feel as though they want to give somebody advice on something that they know nothing about. For example, if you are not Aboriginal, if you are not part of that so-called Black, so-called African American, at African nationality, there's nothing that you can tell me about my nationality or my community. So if you ever have some type of input that you want to give to me or my people, the best thing you can do is just shut the hell up and not say nothing, because you're just running it. A lot of that has to do with white supremacy. Oh yeah, we still on that white supremacy. Now we haven't spoke on it an awful lot, but you know, as it shows its ugly face, you know, we still gonna put people in their place. So you know, never come at me in a very passive way and then think that I'm not gonna ever check you. I might let it slide for a little bit. You know, somebody told me, had the nerve to tell me that being on the air was a privilege and not a right. White supremacy. It's like telling somebody that traveling is a privilege and not everybody has the right to travel. Who built these airways? Oh, I guess it must have been the Europeans. Y'all built everything else and y'all took ownership of everything else, right? Yeah. On the air, I can say what I want to say. Don't ever try to coach me on how to have my own radio show and try to steal my platform based on whatever it is you're going through in your life. So remember, once again, if you have any information, you speaking out of turn about something that you don't know nothing about, the best thing that you can do is shut the hell up and don't say nothing. That's just what that is. Shut up. Stay out of my zone. You know, you can say that's personal as much as you want. But sometimes, you know, I take things personal, I guess, because I am a person. So, you know, for somebody to say you can't have a radio show and talk about something that's personal, hey, come on, man. Y'all out there, y'all foolish, man. Y'all foolish. And hopefully, whoever I'm talking to, since I can't mention names on the air without possibly being sued, you know, I know how a lot of y'all punks out there like to play. Don't think that it's over. I'm gonna see you. And it's far from over. This must be Dr. Moda. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what is going on?
Not much.
Nothing much. You know, you people might look at me as being in my lower self right about now. But that's today's show that we're going to be talking about is folks being in their lower self. So,
being in their what?
Being in their lower self. Do you know anything about lower and higher self?
Yeah, higher self and a lower self. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am.
They're not behaving their best?
Well, Corey, could you break down lower self and higher self a little bit for the doctor? So if we could get into this conversation about, you know, people being stuck in their lower self and higher self, and then maybe you can give the folks out there some medicine to help them out a little bit so they can get out of their lower self and start getting closer to their higher self.
Okay.
Dr. Moda, you familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yes.
When Brennan's making a reference to the lower self or higher self, it's pretty much a generic term. So in the Bible, it talks about living in the spirit as opposed to living in the flesh. In the conscious community, talk about your higher self and your lower self, or, you know, with the chakra system and all that type of stuff, the metaphysical world. On a psychological level, lower self would be the first level, or the first four levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Okay.
So the first four levels, meaning lower self, as in you're focused mostly on self and dealing with needs and or deficiency needs, as opposed to living in the spirit or living in a higher self where you're focused on altruism and creation and helping others, and not so much your own personal pursuits and personal mm-hmm. desires and needs and wants, whatever.
Okay, so they're in survival mode.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Okay.
So, being in survival mode, we'd like to talk to you about a whole lot of stuff. But before we even get into that, what have you been into? You know, I want to find out what are you actually into right now? And I know you have an awful lot of stuff always going on. So if you could just take some time to let our listeners know exactly what you into and what's going on before we get into today's conversation.
Okay, well, as a licensed psychologist, I want to focus on what I have been doing is working with some of the difficult kids in Fayette County Public School. Many of them look like me, African American, and they've been through some trauma. They have some probably home lives that are not helping them be their best self or their higher self. And just trying to speak some positivity and be in their corner. I've been meeting them in the schools. I've been trying to get them some psychiatric help. I've met a couple in the juvenile detention center. So I'm just trying to be, I look at my practice as a ministry, trying to be there in the gap where kids, well, most people in our community don't have access to quality mental health.
Now, I was having a conversation with my dear friend Daniel Whitley today, and he does he's an attorney, you know, he's a legal aide. He does a lot of work in the criminal justice department, and honestly, just really looking at the state of it, if anybody looks at the epidemic, there's the heroin epidemic, or you might even look at it as a pandemic. I look at the state of young black males, so-called black or so-called African-American males and females, as an epidemic based on the way that their actions are. And I do see a lot of positivity. But when I look at the overall future for our young men and women, I can't say that it looks bright. You know, it's very scary to even think that people have to raise young children in a world where you're starting to see a lot of young men and women that don't have any natural compassion for their brothers and sisters. You know, you have women that cheer on the males to act in a beastly lower self type of fashion. And that is something that a lot of people honor themselves with having the ability to do. So when we're looking at this epidemic and we're trying to give treatment to people that seem as though a lot of them that I deal with reject that treatment, and maybe, you know, when you feed a baby, they don't want it, you know, they reject the food, you know, they kind of spit it out, you know, and sometimes you might have to force feed them, but let's be for real, can you force feed these young teens the medicine that they need to better themselves? Or do you feel like the future for our young men and women is bleak? I know I threw a lot out there at you.
I think we're failing them. I think we have failed them as the older people when we have allowed them to be exposed to probably too much that they cannot handle. I think that we have allowed them to make decisions that they're not capable of making. And we have been, well, I say we, not you or me personally, but as a whole, we have not been a good role model of what what's real and what's not real. You know, if you're looking at the rap music and your stars and or even your community entrepreneurs who make money the illegal way, we just see that there's a lot of money and there's a lot of material things. And that's more important than my life, because while I'm here, I'm going to live it up. And so we haven't taught them delayed gratification. Sometimes they look at us and they think we always had what we have. And they don't understand the work that came into that. And so they want it quick. But we just failed them. We put too much electronics in their hands. We put too much YouTube, social media, videos. You know, I have teenagers, and I was telling them that back when NWA came out, that's how old I am, I didn't know the lyrics because we didn't have access to the music. We only had the radio version. So now they get to hear all the words and see all, everything that I probably wouldn't have been able to see. So yeah, we failed them. Just because it's out there doesn't mean that they should, you know, be exposed to it.
So you mentioned social media, music, but I haven't heard you mention anything about drugs or sex or guns or violence. The first thing that seemed like it popped to you was the music. So do you feel as a licensed professional that that's where it all starts, is with the music, the entertainment aspect of things, or do you think it's deeper than that?
Oh, it's deeper than that. I mean, the music is glorifying the drugs and the criminal lifestyle, but the drugs, I think most of the issues probably go back to drugs, even from, you know, my parent is in prison because of drugs, or my parent was on drugs, or, you know, the fact they have access apparently to marijuana and being told that it is not as harmful as I think it is. So yeah, I mean, it all boils down to the drugs.
So
I think.
So when we boil down to those drugs, can we start saying the drugs that we're talking about, parents that are possibly in prison? What about the drugs that the doctors are giving to our children at such a young age? Soon as we come out of the womb, you know, we are getting doses of drugs. So are those drugs causing any side effects, or have you heard of any side effects when you start talking about autism, or if you look at it, so many children these days popping up with ADD, ADHD, and all the drugs and shots that are required from the school system? You know, I just buried a couple grandparents, you know, in the last 5 years that have lived all over 90 years old, or close to 90, you know, right now, and I'm pretty sure they were not getting those shots that we needed, that we're being forced to take, in the life expectancy of our people of African American descent are passing away at an earlier age.
You're talking about vaccines?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, are those vaccines. Can we look at that as being the beginning of the drug culture in America?
I don't, but I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't prescribe, and I don't propose to know a lot about medication, but I don't think, I've heard the arguments about vaccines being connected to autism, people taking ADHD medication. I think that, I don't know if it's necessarily addictive in terms of being a gateway drug, but I think it exposes the community to Adderall and things that they shouldn't have, people who are not prescribed that medication. So I think that, but I haven't heard this idea that if you're on an ADHD medication that you somehow become addicted or start taking something else. So I don't know about that particular argument. So, but I've heard the arguments about that. But I think that when I'm dealing with parents who are considering putting their kids on medication and certainly vaccines, we have to look at the pros and cons, and if you're willing to risk some of the negatives of not taking the vaccine or not giving your child the medication. And personally, you know, a life of, you know, unless I'm going to you know, pull my kid out and homeschool him, that I don't want them to have a negative school experience, because that's a place that they have to spend a lot of time in. And when it becomes a negative experience because that child's not able, or they're not able to deal with them, whatever it, the problem might be, all I know is that particular child is having a negative life experience, and that I would rather prevent. So if that meant that I would, you know, consider medication, then I would say consider the medication. But, you know, but I'm not a doctor, so I'm not a medical doctor.
Well, I appreciate that.
Now, I have a couple. This is Corey. I have a couple questions for you, too. Okay. One being, if we're talking about the behavior of our young people,
mm-hmm.
I would... I've done some study and research and YouTube videos, TED Talks, this, that, and the other. And amongst the, from my understanding, I could be wrong, and that's why I'm asking you this question. From my understanding, the psychological community, or some people within that community, have a belief that a child's perception of world views is based on his experiences towards the age of 7. Would you agree with that?
Starting at the age of 7?
Well, I mean, like, basically the culmination of events up to or around the age of 7 basically will somewhat dictate the child's personality, their outlook on life, etc. Would you agree with that?
Oh, no. I mean, trauma can change the way we look at life at 45. You know, the way you look at life is based on your experiences, but it certainly doesn't begin or end at any particular age.
Okay. Now, my next question
is... For example, if you are, you know, if you're 45 and you're the person that's closest to you, your child is killed by gun violence, that's going to change your whole, probably your mindset about gun violence and about life in general, because that trauma is just unexpected. So, no.
Now, as you talk about trauma, one of the things that I've been looking up lately is acute childhood experiences. You mentioned children having parents who were incarcerated or potentially on drugs, this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we as adults would like to say that the parents are unfit and the kids are just bad and write them off because they're not going to change because they don't want to. So would you care to speak on your experience or your opinion on ACEs and the impact that they have on a child developing and, you know, their behavior maybe when they reach like the early teenage years?
Okay, well, the ACEs, you know, is basically 10 types of trauma that they show that adults who were having problems physically and mentally experienced as a child. And so we use that to try to say these are traumas, because many people don't identify a trauma and how it might affect you as an adult. So, you know, I'll just go through those quick. Everybody's familiar with physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, substance abuse, mental illness in your family, being separated from a parent by divorce or separation, and a person in your family, in your household, going to prison. So those are the 10 types of trauma that they study. And so if you've experienced at least 3 or 4 of those, it's going to probably significantly affect your life. If you experience those as children, I think it's even more of a chance of it affecting you, just because you're developing, your brain is developing up to 22, 23. So I wouldn't be in my business if I didn't think people could change. So I certainly don't mean that that's gonna, you know, for a lot of people who've been through significant abuse, multiple, what we call complex trauma, it probably will lead to a personality disorder, which is a little bit more pervasive and a little bit more difficult to treat. However, with the right treatment, medication, and all that, they could probably function most of it. So, in terms of, I think the expectation is a lot of people have experienced 1 or 2. And depending on how healthy their social support and their family life is, and how, and whether, you know, it was complex trauma or one particular event, it might affect the way they able to recover from the trauma. But as adults, it's good and important for us as adults to recognize that we've been through trauma, recognize that maybe the people around us, or we did not treat it at that time, and how it might come out in different ways as adults. Because I believe that the reason why I went into psychology, I believe there is a reason for everything. There's a reason why you're behaving that way. And so my job would be to help process your early attachment to your parents, to your childhood environment, to the way they dealt with certain traumas and treated you, to the kind of stressors you might be under at the particular time that's bringing out probably some of this hidden trauma. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that answers the question.
Oh, it does, and just makes more and more questions. I hope you don't mind. One of the things I think about with ACEs is that through just looking at videos and reading material and stuff, that a lot of times people who have high ACE scores are often diagnosed with having ADHD. When it may be more deeply rooted, deep-seated underlying issues that produce the same type of behaviors as someone with ADHD. And I know that they recommend medication a lot of times for children on ADHD. So my question is this. You prescribe children medication. Now, on a scientific, physics? Not physics is movement. What is it? Chemicals and elements and all that. Okay, the scientists that put all this stuff together, they say that on a molecular level, ADHD medicine is almost equivalent to cocaine. Now, if we know that children who have an A score, the higher the A score, the more likely they are to use drugs. The higher the A score, the more likely they are to have all these negative issues. Then does it really make sense to prescribe a child ADHD medicine that is similar molecularly to cocaine, knowing that their A scores has the potential of making them predisposed to drug addiction in the first place?
Okay. Well, I think, first of all, the medication is prescribed based on symptoms, no matter what the diagnosis is. Sometimes I think we get kind of hung up on the actual diagnosis, but what we're doing is treating symptoms. So a symptom of ADHD that might be the same symptom as being depressed and having anxiety is being able to manage your emotions and your behavior. So what happens is, and I tell kids this all the time, if you're unable to manage your behavior and your emotion, they're going to put you in a place where they're going to control your behavior and your emotions. Meaning if you're acting out, and this is the hyperactivity impulsive part of ADHD, you're not able to react in the right way for whatever reason. It could be a trauma, it could be ADHD, it could be a mood disorder, it could be anxiety, it could be schizophrenia, I don't know. But no matter what the diagnosis is, you're treating the symptom. So the symptom for ADHD that mostly gets medicated is hyperactivity and impulsivity. That causes you to act before you think, being impulsive. That causes you to maybe react a little bit greater than someone else. Of course, that could be, you know, taught as well. So the medication itself is necessary for you to function in a society or a classroom where the expectation is that you will sit down, you will listen, you will do this work, you will not hit people. You know what I mean? You will sit here, that kind of thing. So we're treating symptoms that are going to make you be able to stay in that environment. If they do not, what happens is you're out in that class, you're out of the regular class because you can't necessarily disrupt the entire class. You're put in a self-contained classroom with other children, with a special ed teacher. After that, you could be put in a self-contained emotional behavior disorder classroom, or you go over to the alternative school. And all of these are ways to say, okay, since you cannot manage your emotion and your behavior, I have to have an environment set up to help you And that's what prison does.
Well,
it helps you manage your behavior.
Now, that I'm going to have to disagree with you, because I've been to prison and it doesn't help you manage your behavior, because most people in prison do not get counseling. The prison is not set up to help you get better. It's set up to punish you.
So it helps you. Does it help you hopefully not hit people or not?
No, in prison, made me more violent, more aggressive. Because in a prison,
you were probably put in an environment. That's what happens in special education. If you're put in an environment with other people who can't model something different, and other people that might have some of the same issues, it's very difficult, like you said, to improve.
Now, I have a question about the medication. You were saying that it helps you to, when people can't control their emotions, they get put on medication to help them balance out or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't marijuana do the same thing? But because my question is this, or my thought, I can't say my question, my thought is this. I know people who self-medicate to help calm them down so that they can sit still and pay attention without going off and punching people. And I understand that on a psychological level, as a healthcare professional, you're not very big on marijuana because of the dangers.
It's illegal.
Right. Oh yeah, most definitely. And it's self-medication. Well, it's illegal some places. Well, it's illegal in Kentucky, let's say that.
Okay.
But if marijuana was not illegal, and it's a natural herb, so you know what's in the marijuana, as opposed to what Pfizer, because there's all kind of lawsuits. You know, the medical industry, the same medical industry that produces these ADHD medications.
Let's call it
psychotropic medications.
Yeah.
The psych drugs are pioneered by the Nazis in Nazi Germany. They were using those same chemicals and experimenting on them as a ways to do in the control of the Jews when they were in concentration camps. So, you know, my thought is, giving that type of medication to a young developing mind, we wouldn't give a kid cocaine because he can't sit still in class. And at the same time,
marijuana.
And marijuana either. I agree with you there. But at the same time, it's like, if you say,
girl, some cough syrup.
Well, my thought is this. If you give I look at it like the heroin epidemic. You get people hooked on heroin. You want to stop them from being hooked on heroin. So then you give them Suboxone. Now they're hooked on Suboxone.
Mm-hmm.
They're still addicted to drugs. It's just a different drug. So if we have children who cannot maintain themselves and can't regulate their own behavior or their emotions, and we put them on drugs, they're not regulating their behavior and emotions. The drugs are. So now so then those kids have to be on that drug indefinitely, right?
No.
So
some of them mature. Some of them get treatment and therapy along with the drugs. And some of them just change because they learn how to accommodate themselves and the environment changes, where, you know, you might be a person that get a certain job where you can move around and you can accommodate some of your issues. It just depends. I don't think you have to be on it forever, but this whole marijuana thing is very perplexed to me because I have this conversation all the time. I've never smoked marijuana. I don't know what it feels like. I have taken Percocet after having a baby, and I did not like that feeling of being high. But let me just talk about this marijuana, because I don't think it's as harmless as people think. Because sometimes the people become complacent and lazy and unable to function.
You're talking about amotivational syndrome, correct?
With the marijuana, because in psychology, it's all about whatever you're doing. It could be weird, it could be different, but are you able to function? Are you able to be a law-abiding citizen that go to work and function, or go to school and get and function? And I don't know if people who smoke a lot of marijuana are able to do that.
And that's where I come
Snoop
in at,
Dogg
as
does.
Far as the
Willie Nelson,
the functionality of these young adults and adults in a society that can be harmful for citizens. So, you know, I don't have any issue when you start looking at locking somebody up that does not know how to contain themselves. They cannot contain themselves. The medicine doesn't help them contain themselves if they do take the medicine, but then they don't want the medicine. They don't want the help. So there's nothing else that you can do, with the understanding that I'm an advocate for my people first. Before I'm an advocate for my people, I'm an advocate for my household. So if I'm looking at my child, if I'm looking at my wife, I can't say that the best place for you to be is in society if my wife and my children are in society, and you being in society, you can't help but to harm other people. And I never in a million years would have think that I would have had that thought process. But once again, going back to looking at the youth, you know, I have a degree in child care assistance, you know, working with children. So from the time that I was working with children over 15 years ago, the culture of children, the way that the children are now interacting with other children, is getting worse. It's not getting any better. They're getting younger and younger. You know, they're getting even more violent. They don't have any natural emotion. They're prideful. They're jealous. They're angry. I mean, so when you start throwing all of these negativities at a child, and we can say whoever's fault it is, you know, it could be the parent's fault. You know, let's blame the parent, but it doesn't change the fact that if we blame the parents and say it's the parent and fault, it's the parent's fault, that then we have these children that are in a society that are looking to want to hurt other children. Let's look at these school shootings. Now, we all can look at them as isolated incidences, and all of them going to have a different makeups as to what led that person to do it. But at the same time, there is a major issue with our culture and in our society right now that we have young adults that want to go and shoot children, want to hurt children. You know, so what is going on with our culture to where we have young Europeans that want to run around and just shoot people with assault rifles or with rifles, what I'm calling them, assault rifles, because they're assaulting people with them. We have young so-called blacks and African Americans that want to go to Instagram and show on anything on social media a fight, so they're going to even agitate a fight just to see it happen, just so they can show it and they can laugh. What's going on with the culture of our children? Because I know you said that you got into the field because you feel as though that you can make a change. Now, even a small change can save, you know, dozens of lives, especially if somebody shoots and harms somebody. That's going to affect, you know, dozens of people. So, you know, what you're doing is great work. Is it enough? You know, what
is a morality issue and a spiritual issue.
So we need to, and I'm not going to say get our children back in the church, because I can't even speak on the whole church body because it'd be ignorant of me. But, you know, when we are looking at the morality issue, that's a whole lot of morality issues within the four walls. You know, a lot of that morality issues is coming in and saying that, you know, you can have the same sex marriage. You know, you're bringing politics into God's house. You know, you're bringing infidelity into God's house. So where does a person go to work on that at moral compass, that moral code, for them to in turn raise a child that is loving and caring? Or can you raise a child to be loving and caring if they're being raised around other wolves? You know, if you a lamb, I know the Bible talks about being a lamb. Wolves devour lambs. So is it like when we get into the conversation about being safe to take and let our children go to school, now we have children and we are being forced, or some people are being forced. You know, you can always homeschool a child, but you have mothers and fathers that are sending their children to school amongst wolves. So now there's a fear that we don't want to send our kids to school, you know, based on everything that's going on, and the culture's getting worse. So I understand what you said as far as, you know, there's we're exposing them to things that they can't handle. You know, there's music, there's a need for drugs. Do children just need to start going to counseling in elementary school? Should that be one of the things on the table, to where all children starting in kindergarten start going through some type of counseling session, so we can start finding out what's going on before they even get into the second, third, and fourth grade?
Well, I don't know. Not necessarily counseling. I mean, I use broad terms when I say counseling. I think there needs to be some lessons taught in the schools And I say schools, I put a lot of responsibility in the school because that's where a lot of kids spend a lot of their time. And I believe that they have the capacity to do it when some parents may not because they're educated and they should know better. But they can start, and they have. They have counselors in the school that do a little bit of that, but they're not able to do enough of that.
Can I?
But counseling in terms of telling them and showing them how to manage their emotions and their behaviors. Because, you know, anger is a natural emotion. I'm sure there's a need for it, or we wouldn't have it. However, you have to manage everything you do. Everything about you, everything has to be in moderation. I don't care if it's a good thing, it has to be in moderation. Right? You agree? Something good. Church, the Bible has to be in moderation. People can take that too far. Water, something we need and good for you, but you have to do that in moderation as well.
So, I like the moderation. My question, I guess, now is, I went to a thing that they had at the school a while back, and one of the children was a high school student, was advocating for having psychology classes as an elective in high schools.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if we as a society, not just you, because you know it, which is why you have a job and job security, because the rest of us don't know it. Do you think that it would be beneficial to all people on the face of the earth, whether you got A scores or not, whether you're impoverished or not, whether you're black, white, pink, purple, male, female, young, old, bald or not, you know, had to throw the bald part out there. You know, do you think that all of us would benefit from studying psychology?
Yes.
And do you think that, well let me ask you this. We talked about ACEs. Now, most of the children, is it like 1 in 12 that has an A score of 4 or higher? Is that accurate? Like 1 in 12?
You mean adults, because this is an adult thing.
Yes, I'm talking about when you have an adult that has an A score, say, of, I think it's like 1 in 12 that has 4 or more points on their A score, right? Is that accurate?
Maybe.
Well,
yeah, sounds good.
Do you know what percentage of adults have children? Because my thought is this. Adults with high A scores are probably going to be more likely to parent in a way that causes their children to have A scores. Would you agree with that? For instance, if you have a parent that's... Well, let me ask you this. Do you feel that physical abuse, sexual abuse, and verbal abuse could be generational, where a father who molest children, his children will grow up and may molest another child and an ongoing type of thing? Do you think that that's common?
I think it's common.
So then if we have so many adults with high A score, A scores, how do we get those parents who may not be interested in psychology, may not care about the A scores, or may just assume that they're great parents already, how do we get those parents to understand the damage that they're doing in their parenting styles and techniques if they bring the same type of parenting styles that caused them their A scores in the first place?
I think in general, it would be so great if OBGYNs and primary care doctors would encourage mental health. So, for example, you're having a baby, you go and get your OBGYN checks. The assumption is that we all know how to parent, which, you know, that's just a big crazy assumption.
A lie detector test determined that was a lie.
Yes. So what we have is people who are having a baby that should probably, like, you go to Lamar's class and you get your checkup. What about parenting classes? Because early attachment is really the root of a lot of that. Early attachment to your mother more so than your father, but that's a whole nother discussion. But early attachments are very important. What we do to what we give that child to respond to their emotional distress, what we give them in terms of affection and love. We have this thing in the community where we say, don't hold that baby, don't pick that baby up, you're going to spoil the baby. which is kind of totally against what you should be doing, because you should be responding to a child in distress. But again, your original thing is, and even adults to today, not even parents, primary care doctors, people are more apt to go see their doctor for something physical than they would to even think about going to see a mental health professional. It's just not even on their brain.
Can I ask one question real quick about that?
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about the mental going to see them. Can you break down the negative consequences of being, you know, associated with those high A scores? I know one of them, if you have an A score of 8 or higher, I think that your life expectancy is 20 years less than someone who has an A score of 1.
That would be a lot of aces.
Yeah,
I said, a person like that will probably have a serious mental illness, if not a personality disorder.
But beyond the mental issue, like, are you familiar with all the physical, you know, like the high blood pressure?
Cancer from, premature babies to heart attacks, all of that.
So how come that isn't being discussed as an epidemic? If heart attack and heart disease is the number one killer in America, how come we aren't associating the A? How come it's not being done where the A scores are being associated with the negative physical health outcomes that those A scores and those traumatic experiences produce?
Because we're in a society where mental health is sort of still kind of taboo. And a lot of stigma, not just in the African-American community, but in general. I mean, we're getting a little bit better. Younger people, I think, are more apt to say, I went to see my therapist today. But we also have a shortage of quality mental health. And I say quality. And then we have the insurance industry that kind of discourages mental health. Most mental health professionals, if you're not in an agency, probably will not take insurance. I guess supply and demand, they're able to function and not see people and take insurance. But what I feel like what happens in the school and doctors is that if I ask you about your mental health and you tell me something, I might have to do something about it. And I can't. I don't have the knowledge or access to give you. Like, if I give you a quick suicide screener, 3 questions, and you say something, I have to be able to respond to that. And we want people to ask these questions. We want teachers, anybody, they train doctors and police officers and firefighters to do a suicide screener. And it's been shown to prevent most suicides if you ask these 3 questions. And if I can get parents to do it, and many parents are very surprised when they ask their kids, have you ever thought about killing yourself? Have you ever thought about what it would be like if you weren't here? And they say, yeah, I thought about it. Then your next question, have you thought about how you would do it? And they might say, I'd probably take some pills. I'll take, and for a fact they have access to some pills, your pills. Then you have a responsibility there. And most professionals know that if you ask those questions and you do not take precautions, you could be legally responsible for not responding well. So I think it's just afraid. And when things happen, I hear it all the time with suicide to mental health. People are like, everybody knew, but nobody did anything. I was just reading a book called Cuz, which is about a true story about a young man who went to prison at 16. And this lady that wrote the book was a Harvard professor. And I read that book, and not at one time did I hear her say that the family got him mental health. And he ended up, dying, or Khalif Browder ended up committing suicide. Not once did I hear anybody say that the person was sent to a therapist.
Are you referring to the guy in New York that
got sent to Rikers Island as a teenager,
and bad things happened to him there? Like, he was abused physically and whatnot, mm-hmm. and then found out that he was not guilty.
In solitary confinement, maybe 180 days out of the 300 days that he was there without even being charged. They just couldn't afford his bail, so he wasn't even charged, and he was 16.
which is another reason why more people need to go sign up for the Youth Mental Health First Aid with Fayette County Public Schools. You a very intelligent lady, which is why I always love having you on the show. You know, and it always tells me, you know, somebody like you should probably run for school board, which that's right, y'all. So
you're good.
So what are your plans? You know, since you are on her, and you know we have listeners that are listening to you on her. What are your plans? Why are you running for school board?
Well, the reason why I'm running for school board is because I feel like I have been talking to the wall, and I do not want to be ignored. I have been talking about equity for our kids from the discipline data. The number of African Americans are three times, the students are three times more likely to get punished in the school system with suspensions and FAPE and all of that stuff. From going over to MLK to being put in special education to having lack of access to quality programs like SCAPA to hiring minority teachers. I mean, all of these things are ridiculous. I mean, it just makes me just crazy. And people have said I've been probably turned up too much.
Yeah. But no, that's great.
Me that people don't understand it and see it.
So what district are you running in? I know they have districts. So if somebody wanted to follow you, somebody wanted to support you, somebody wanted to vote for you, what district are you actually in?
I am representing the 2nd District, which is where a lot of our high poverty, high minority schools like Williams Wells Brown to Booker T. Washington to Bryan Station High School. I live in Masterson Station, and so we have a lot of the schools that they talk about that are not performing well are in the 2nd District, the north side of town.
So
I call the north side.
So what you got, Crawford too?
Crawford. That's a good question. I'm not sure.
So if somebody wants to vote, what do they do? Just go to the voting polls and vote for you during the primaries? Or primaries? Or they go to the school system? How do they vote for somebody that doesn't know how to vote for somebody going for school board?
Well, there's no primary. And so it has to be in November. And if you're in the 2nd District, you will see that on your screen. It's a nonpartisan race. However, if you're going, hopefully you're going to vote for the mayor down to the school board, and you'll see Mulder. I don't have an opponent at this time that I'm aware of. There might be an opponent by November because they still have time to file.
Well, we going to tell everybody right now, don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've learned that there's never been an African-American female elected to the school board in Fayette County.
Say what? Hold on. Can you say that one more again?
Hold on. Before you even say that, let me pause this music. Now, what'd you say?
I'm saying there's never been an African-American female elected to the school board. There was a time when Marlene Helm was the interim superintendent, and she was up there serving the school board, but she was not elected. So there's never been an African-American female elected to the board.
But we've had several women run, correct?
They have not ran.
So this is a first.
This is a first in 2018. Can you believe that?
Well, heck, slavery wasn't abolished in Kentucky until, what, 1978?
And I say that, people say, why do you say that? I said, because it's important. It's very important. I'm not going to go into how important African-American females have been in this political season. But I will say that it's important that African-American females and any other particular group be represented on when you're making decisions.
Do you happen to know the racial makeup of Fayette County Public Schools?
The student body?
Yes, the student body. I'm sorry.
I believe there's about 40% minorities, because I just did this with about 70% of minority teachers. I believe the district is probably 40% minority.
Now, you say a minority. What the heck is a minority? That term don't sound like it's like a real term. Is that like when you take all color folks and blacks, whites, poor whites and just jumble us up in a bag and shake us up and just throw us on the ground? Is that how you get a minority?
We're talking racial minority at this time, and so it will be anybody who doesn't identify as being white.
So what about how many, you know, I'm going to keep it real, and a lot of people might not like it. How many so-called black or African Americans are in the Fayette County school system? Because I'm not fighting for all the rest of them, because ain't none of them fighting for me. And that might sound pretty bad. You know, people might say, you know, that's racist, but no. Ain't nobody ever stood up and just fought for us alone.
Well, no, say this. So we've never had representation, so ain't nobody been there to fight for us.
So now you're giving us somebody else's problem on top of our problem, and our problems are so complex and perplexed that we have enough issues trying to fight for our own. So I don't even want somebody else's problems and culture being jumbled up on top of ours, and we can't even get through to ours until we fight for theirs. So how many blacks or so-called black or African Americans are there in the Fayette County school systems, or do they even do it like that?
Yeah.
They do it. I don't know what the number is, but they break it down. But I mean, me personally, we have what we call the gap group, identified as the gap group. The students that aren't doing well, and that would be black, Hispanic, students with English as a second language, students with disabilities, and poor students being identified by being on free and reduced lunch.
Oh, can I ask you a question about that? Mm-hmm. Because one thing that has been brought to my attention is that white males are not even added, or they're not even tested to see if they are in that achievement gap. But my question is this. If white males are not being tested because they're superior for whatever reason on a standardized test, and they say they do better, so they don't even have to test them. How can you explain why low income white males perform exactly the same level as Hispanics and low income blacks?
Well, let me tell you, all students are tested. And we're talking about as a group. Of course, there's high-performing African-Americans and Hispanics and low-performing. But on average, all students are assessed. And poor students, even poor black students, do worse than poor white students. So when people try to say it's about poverty and income, it's not.
So what is it about?
It's about race.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's about race.
So when you say it's about race, what... Could you break that down a little bit more when you say it's about race? We have maybe about 4 minutes, so real quick, break it down when you say it's about race.
Real quick, the research says an African-American teacher is less likely to send an African-American student to the office and suspend them. They would deal with that behavior before they did that. So the discipline data definitely shows that. And in terms of academics, it's about race. In terms of bias, it's about, you can look up psychological studies where they told students, you know, the teacher that the student was X, Y, and Z, and they came out differently. And you can look up all kind of psychological terms from stereotype threat to bias in the schools, and a teacher that's able to teach at a school like Wellington is different than being able to teach at Booker T. Washington.
Hmm.
You know, the skills are different, the expectations are different, the environment's different, and a lot of them are not equipped to teach African-American students.
So then do you think that the implicit bias is responsible for the achievement gap?
Well, we'll call it implicit. Sure.
So we want to know what you're going to call it, doctor.
I'm going to call it because I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, and my school's 99% black students. And there may have been some white teachers and might even been some white students. I don't know where they were, but I'm sure there was some. But I felt like what we were learned was about ourselves and how to be confident. And so when we come to classroom, we want to learn, and we can learn because we know that our teachers care about us, care about more than just teaching us. They know about us and they care about us. And I say, when you look at the data from Carter G. Woodson, and it's a great example, it's a local example, and it's a great example of how you could take particular groups of students and teach them differently and they would excel.
Now, my question about that is, with the Carter G. Woodson Academy, they have 76% white teaching staff. So What makes Carter G. Woodson Academy different from Lafayette?
Well, the district has 7% black teachers. So if you got 30%, you got a whole lot. Some people will say, I believe that Fayette County needs to hire a full-time minority recruitment and retention person. And other people do not agree.
Non-melanated people?
Intentional effort. You can't just go out and say and expect them to come. Because people have black teachers. Well, black teachers are being stopped in the college level as well. So there's not a lot out there. But we just have to be a little bit more intentional.
Well, we definitely appreciate you calling in. You know, and everybody, if you out there, I can't tell you who to vote for. So if I was to say, go vote for Mulder for school district number 2, you know, you don't have to listen to me. Even if I just kept on telling you, go vote for Mulder, go vote for Mulder. That's who you need to vote for district 2. And I wouldn't even, how would you spell it? M-U-L-D-E-R, M-U-L-D-E-R for district 2 school board. If you was to vote, I can't tell you to vote because, hey, you don't have to vote. But if you did vote and you loved to vote and you wanted to better your school and get somebody in there that looks like you that's gonna fight for you, you would vote for somebody like Dr. Mulder that is a doctor. So leave it at that. We appreciate you calling in. Hopefully we can talk to you some more. We gotta get out of here. You know, we out of here. Y'all listen to Blackout Radio.
Oh yeah, and just so you know, Dr. Mulder, I'm gonna be one of those people that's take that first step. I'm gonna come see you. I just gotta, you know, get my insurance and stuff together. But I believe that you offer peace. So you know, I'm gonna come holler at you as soon as I can get that together.
All right, you're on record.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
I would too, but I'm not crazy.
That's that stigma we're fighting. See, listen, what you're talking about.
Listen, I would too, but I'm not crazy. Which you listen to her, right? She's like, I've been waiting for you for a long time, Mr. Dunn. So you know, we appreciate you coming through Blackout Radio. We'll see y'all next week. We out. Peace.
Bye.